right, folks. So this is a lecture that I've done a few times. This was actually my 2018 Perform Better Summit, Perform Better One Day Lecture in Hands-On. And this is called Metabolic Resistance Training. And I'm going to talk about, you know, kind of a lot of the development of it and how we got about came about to coming up with these protocols. But to start, I wanted to just establish that we're talking about morphing the metabolic conditioning, fat loss kind of properties that we associate with cardio, but with the fat burning, EPOC, muscle building stuff that we know really, really works in the research in terms of our strength training. So what we're trying to do is find that perfect little sweet spot to say what kind of loading is optimal, what kind of set rep range or volume is going to be optimal, and what's a realistic work to rest ratio so that I can not only just get this training effect, because it's easy to gas somebody, but I want to get a training effect that's going to result in this crazy afterburn and lean body mass, which is what we all need. So when we think about general population, we think about the properties or the goals, 99% of the people will come to you as a trainer, as a coach, if you're working with somebody, especially general pop. And it will be, I want to lose fat. I want to lose dress sizes, jean sizes. I want to feel fit. I want to tone, that term that I hate. But they basically mean I want to get more muscular, right? I want to change the shape of my body. Well, this is going to be the biggest bang for your buck way to do that. It's going to be a one-shot deal where we're going to incorporate the two. Now, that being said, if you have somebody who's a hard gainer, who doesn't care about that, who's very, very lean, ectomorphic perhaps, who just wants to gain weight, gain mass, then you would take a different approach. We would take more of a, let's look at what you're eating. Let's get on a good hypertrophy-based program. We're not going to push the tempo, right? I don't need to morph the two. I just need to do the hypertrophy part of it, right? So I can stick to traditional methods of doing that and a periodization schedule. So I wanted to make sure we establish that first and foremost before we go forward. But also, that being said, I keep saying general population. For athletic populations, performance populations, these are valuable protocols because we all have athletes who could be better if they lost some body fat, or could be better if we could build their work capacity. And these are the types of protocols that are going to do that. So this would be a great, might not be your bedrock of training for them, but it's a great change up. It's a great thing to do during, you know, we would do during our bye weeks, a lot of stuff during the off season. And then we would address more of these issues with specific groups of specific individuals that need to lose weight, right? I don't want to just say, oh, let's just go do cardio. I want to have everything that we're doing kind of going towards that goal, all right? All right, long introduction. Sorry about that. So obviously, I'm very, very proud to be a part of the NSPA. You know, to be in here at the ground level and to start this thing with Pat Beath and the whole crew there, and to start to establish the education process and the certifications and our amazing conferences that we have one already. We've got one coming up in 2019. So if you're not familiar with it, please get familiar with it. Please look at this stuff and see what our events are. Look at the search. We've had such amazing feedback from people all over the world. So we really feel like this is going to be the gold standard going forward. As far as, you know, what I've been doing, most of you guys have heard of me. I would assume you're probably listening to this because you've heard my name before. I've done this for over 30 years, primarily first 20-something years, you know, performance-based, right? Athletics, collegiate athletics, high school athletics, and then now a lot of general pop in terms of education, going in and doing tons of workshops and trainer eds and continue education for, you know, big gyms, small studios, schools, to try to get them going and maybe give them a little spark in their training, right? Maybe they're feeling like they're not quite getting the most out of their time. Obviously, family, I've preached that for years. I mean, that's kind of what we come home to, and it's really got to be a big part of our lives, no matter where you are as a trainer. If you have maybe you're young, starting out, keep that in mind because you're going to be a family person at some point here along the line. And then I also want to give out the biggest shout out to you guys who are actually investing your time, this hour of your life that you're never going to get back. And I appreciate that. I think that whenever I talk to trainers that take 4 hours on their Saturday to sit with me at a gym, you know, a workshop at their gym, that's effort. You know, that's investment, whether it's time, whether it's energy. You could be making money training clients. You could be at the beach. So these are things that are important to me, and I want to make sure that I recognize that of these people, because I'll tell you what, you're not the majority. So the fact that you're sitting here listening to these webinars, you're going to continue, you're going to clinics, you're searching out people, you're trying to, you know, learn more, puts you in the you know, the upper, I'd say, couple of percent of people, of trainers on this planet. So shout out to you. All right. So I love starting with this quote, and it's not, Mike Boyle didn't make this quote up. He pulled it from somewhere, but he talks about this in his conditioning product that we have through Athletes Acceleration. And it basically says, when you're dead, you don't know you're dead. It's difficult only for the people around you who are suffering. Well, it's the same when you're stupid. And I always say this, and it's a funny ha-ha thing, but I think bad trainers, or trainers that have bad protocols and bad training programming, they don't know that they do. So, and if you never go outside of your comfort zone and look around and see what people are doing, you'll never know that it's bad, right? You may even look at something else different and say, yeah, that's cool, but my stuff's fine. And I think that's kind of the recipe for disaster when it comes to being a great trainer. You could be a trainer, you can make money, you can pay your bills, you can live a solid life. But if you really want to get ahead and you really want to create a name for yourself and establish yourself and be somebody that people come to for advice, you better be the best at what you do. And the only way that's going to happen is essentially if you continually analyze, review, and evaluate the stuff that you're doing. Okay, I always say this, I do stuff different this year than I did last year. And if you go back 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, it's significantly different, not because I'm changing for the sake of change, but we learn new things. And I glean new insight from different people's protocols and different tools that we have. And just talking and maybe asking a question from somebody and that I have an answer to, but they have a different answer. And I think, why did that person who I really respect have a different answer? Why did he have a totally different viewpoint on that? And for me, I think that's always been my strong suit, is I don't really have an ego that way. And I'm okay with saying I'm going to change because I think this is going to work better. And a lot of my programming has been, you know, has followed that path basically. So, you know, when we start talking about HIIT, MRT, cardio strength, all these terms that you might see that are going to basically try to encapsulate this concept that high intensity training, intervals, work rest ratios, all that kind of stuff, this is when things get really nasty, because we have a lot of misinformation, we have a lot of ignorance, and then we have a lot of people that just make stuff up, okay? And a lot of the made up stuff is just like, oh my God, I did this workout that this, you know, Insta famous trainer did put up on her page, and man, it was so bad. I couldn't even make it through like 7 minutes of this thing and I was done. Well, that's easy, guys. I mean, it's easy to gas somebody, but we already know based on the research that's not what drives us. That's not what creates progress, and that's not what's going to help us reach our goals. You're going to get beat down, you're going to, you know, feel like you just got crushed, which is fine, and you should feel like that way many times, but that isn't the indicator, right? That shouldn't be the indication that's a good workout. Good workout's going to be something that I can progress through, keep doing regularly, not get injured in, and then see results quickly, right? You're going to see results very quickly. It's not going to take you months. If you're doing this kind of stuff 3 times a week and you're doing other stuff on the off days, you're going to see results almost instantly. Within a week or two, you're going to start to see changes. You're definitely going to start to feel changes in your work capacity. And going back to what my philosophy is, you guys already know, if you've ever heard me speak, that is my base philosophy, work capacity. If you can build your work capacity, then you can train harder. Then you can pick up the heavier kettlebell. Then you could do that extra set or that extra 5 minutes of that circuit, okay? So this is kind of where we're leading to. All right, so I'm going to put some of these up, and I always say, let's look at it. Let's understand why they're so ridiculously stupid, and then let's move on. Okay, let's not think about this anymore, because I feel like when I put these up on the screen, we get dumber the longer we look at it. So this is something that they call a 20-minute HIIT workout, right? So you're looking at it, and it's basically 10 moves, and they say go through it. So it's 20 minutes, right? So you go, wow, it's a 20-minute workout. That's cool, because time's the number one factor that people use. That's the number one excuse. People don't exercise. I don't have enough time. Well, if you only need 20 minutes, there you go. But if we look at this, when you say work to rest ratio, whether it's 1-to-1, 1-to-2 work to rest, this is a 5-to-1 work to rest. You work 5 and you rest 1. So right away we know it's a made up protocol. Nobody's ever done this. It can't happen. It can happen, but it's going to be really ugly and sloppy, and it's just going to turn into what I call aerobic slop. Okay, and if you look at the exercises, they're very hard. I always say 50-10 might be a good foam rolling protocol where you're working that left glute and you're rolling around on it and you take a 10-second transition to roll to the other side. That's about it. And even then, I feel that that's kind of a fast protocol for that. So we're not doing that. Here's another one that kind of looks at, this one's even funnier. Well, not funnier, more terrifying, I think, because people might actually think this works and they might try it. And it's basically says, do these things for 30 seconds, but there's no rest. So if you look at it, they're going to go through this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 exercises for a total of 4 minutes. Then they're going to rest for 1 minute, and then they're going to do that 3 more times. Okay? So once again, I just call these fairy tales, basically. Or instead of functional training, we call it fictional training. Don't do that. Here's another one that just kind of uses enough. It's very close to the first one we saw, right? They're just kind of saying 45-10. I like to do things on a minute chunk, almost like an EMOM, every minute of the minute. They are kind of going a little more hardcore. They only want you to rest 10, but it's the same type of thing. Very high intensity moves that are going to really kick the heart rate up. It's really going to make you feel like you're going to die, and they're going to do it over and over and over again, and they're chasing that fatigue. Don't do it. Okay, so I'm going to talk about what we want to try to get out of, what we see out of true intervals that show us in the research that result in long, many hours post-workout of EPOC, right, of energy expenditure that's increased. So we're trying to raise the metabolism so that you're still at a higher state of metabolism well after. You've gone to dinner, you've gone to work the next day, you've done the workout the next day. Right, you're starting your workout the next day and you're still elevated. That's what we want. We want to keep building on that like a step ladder, right? So if we look at this, this is kind of what happens when you see AMRAPs. Basically, as many rounds as possible. You're only resting when you absolutely need to. When you feel like you're at all capable, you start the next exercise, you start going. We start to see this thing where you're kind of bouncing around in that red zone. And actually, this is funny because this is actually just somebody running. So it's an aerobic exercise, but this is what a lot of the HIIT stuff looks like, okay? So if we look at it, at those other workouts, if you were even capable of doing those workouts that I showed you earlier, it would kind of look like this, where you'd be bouncing around the whole time. You wouldn't be bouncing out of that red because once you did, you'd have to dip that heart rate down to rest to start again because you would basically empty the tank. You wouldn't be able to go anymore. So, but if it's something that's doable for a long period of time, it's going to be aerobic. And if, just because it's higher end of aerobic, you're kind of at that threshold, still doesn't mean it fits in that anaerobic, HIIT kind of formula that we want. So what we really want is something that looks like this, okay? So we want to basically have something that looks like we're going to crank it up, then we're going to recover. Then we're going to crank it up, and then we're going to recover. Now, based on what we're doing, how long we're doing it for, what the intensity loading is of that exercise, it's going to determine the work-rest ratio, right? But regardless, you're always going to see a drop, okay? We're almost always going to see a drop in that work capacity after the first few rounds just because that's how we're humans and we don't have an unlimited gas tank. So even when we get fully recovered or close to fully recovered, you're still not the person you were 10 minutes ago, okay? So as long as we understand that, you're not strange because it's getting harder. You're normal because it's getting harder. The discomfort and the pain and the anguish that you feel and the little voice in your head that's talking and telling you to stop, it's happening to all of us, okay? And that's how we know that we're in that anaerobic zone where we're working so hard that we're mandating. It's mandatory that we stop and rest. If you're not working hard enough that you don't have to stop and rest, you're just not working hard enough. Now you're not going to fit into these protocols, okay? You could do any of these work-rest protocols in these times, but it doesn't mean that you're going to be doing it right, okay? So we're going to sift through some of the confusion of HIIT. I'm going to kind of explain what these things are. and look at AMRAPs and EMOMs and time sets and densities and this high intensity interval resistance training study that was done that really kind of drove a lot of my, it really motivated me to start to look into how can I dial in heavier, how can I make that person pick up a heavier weight, pick up the heavier set of dumbbells, put more weight on that barbell, grab the heavier sandbag, you know, have that mindset. Whereas before everything's kind of like, we're doing burpees for 40 seconds, or we're crawling, or we're doing jump rope, or we're doing jumping jacks. And everything is like, the more I bounce around, the more I, you know, push the velocity of something, the tempo, the pace, the better. And there's times when we want to do that because we do want to get that in our programming. But the meat at the end of this, we're going to all kind of lead into one tip of a, of this iceberg, which is going to be, how can I morph these two and create protocols where I'm lifting weights, I'm doing my categories, right? All my categories of that I want to work, my push, my pull, my squat, my hinge, my core, my explosive. But how can I dial in, you know, good exercises that are going to be good fits for loading and for tempo and for work rest. Okay. So what kind of exercise selection, who should be doing this stuff, how often should be doing it. And then a lot of common sense, a lot of discipline, and then the caps, all caps, honesty. If you're not honest about the effort, then I can't help you. Okay. If you are going through the motions and you're faking it and you know for a fact that you could be grabbing the 70-pound dumbbells for your dumbbell bench press, but you're always grabbing the 55s or the 60s because that's kind of your comfort zone, then I cannot help you. Okay. It's going to be something that basically doesn't fit in towards our goals. It's not going to help you with the goals here. Okay. It's going to be nothing getting you better in this respect. Okay, so first thing, circuits, right? So circuits are, you set your exercises, you set your number of reps, you move at your own pace, and you set the number of rounds or how much time, right? This has been around as long as time. So I say, here's a kettlebell, you do 10 swings, then you rest as needed, then you do 10 goblet squats, then you walk over here to the TRX, you do 10 rows, you rest as needed, you do 10 push-ups, right? You go over here on the ground, you put your toes on the sliders, you do 10 body saws, like that, right? So I can get all my movement categories, and then you're picking the weight based on what you think would be a pretty tough 10, right? So there's pros and cons. Pros are, you know, if I'm in a group, a small group, or I have a group exercise class, boot camp, people can move at their own pace. So people that are very fit can go faster. But now we run that risk of them not resting enough, not getting as much as they want to get out of it, and that's not getting those spikes in that heart rate. And then that's going to result in less EPOC. So I want them to work harder so they have to drop that spike before they spike it again, okay? Then, so that's a pro and a con. And then the other con is, if you have a group of people, it's easy to get lost, right? It's hard to track people. It's easy for me to not really do 10. Maybe I only do 7 and I move on. Maybe I don't even do those squats because I hate them. Like, no, it's hard to be accountable in that kind of circuit. So good stuff. Kind of suits different populations, better or worse, but I think in general I have better ways to do this, okay? So AMRAP would be, let's just take that same circuit and as many rounds as possible, we're going to go. Now, this is kind of CrossFit, right? You look at CrossFit games, it's essentially that. They have a set amount of things to do, maybe a set amount of times to do it, and then the winner is a person that gets done, has the most amount of work done in that period of time, or they beat a time. So you set up the circuit and you go. Once again, pros and cons are pretty much the same. You're going to have just a lot of really, really kind of threshold heart rate stuff kind of bouncing around that red zone, but you're never going to get those spikes, okay? So yeah, you can get a conditioning effect from that for sure, but when you think about people that aren't very fit, maybe not very competitive, they're not going to really appreciate that. They're not going to thrive. They're not going to like that as much, okay? So now I start to shift and I started thinking about, like, you know, I'm going to look and see what kind of benefits other than the, you know, the stuff we know, lean body mass, power, strength, right? We already know that's the first couple of bullets on there, you know, after burn, right? We know more lean body mass results in greater, higher metabolism, just sitting around watching TV, right? But I started finding stuff, and even in comparison to aerobic exercise, that heavy resistance training was showing significant changes in blood lipid profiles, changes in cholesterol levels for the better, changes in insulin sensitivity in people with pre-diabetic or pre-diabetic. This is weights now. This isn't cardio, right? And the cardio could, you know, there's plenty of studies that show that works too, but this alone, right, is showing that. And then not only that, the thing that really got me was this whole concept that of cognitive function, better brain function from heavy resistance training, right? And this has application. We start talking about elderly population and, you know, lots of issues, obviously, you know, neurological issues later on in life. So this is something that's, yeah, we can address the power. Yeah, we can address lean body mass. We can address bone density, EPOC, fitness. But if we could say, hey, we can help adjust somebody's insulin sensitivity or their brain, you know, keep their brain function fresh and strong longer, this is a no-brainer, right? So this is something we should be looking into for sure. Every minute on the minute, EMOMs, these are great. And this kind of is kind of where I go. I like to do things on the minute. So you set an exercise, you set a load, a number of reps, and you say at the top of every minute, I'm going to perform that. And you see this a lot with powerlifters, you see it a lot with Olympic lifters. They pick a good heavy load, and they say, I'm going to perform 3 deficit snatches at the top of each minute. Do that for 10 minutes, right? So 10 sets. And with those, you know, they go boom, they pull, they get under the weight, they drop it, they reset, they pull again, or they drop it. Maybe it takes them, you know, 15 seconds, 20 seconds to complete those, and then they get a whole 40 seconds to rest. It's not a lot, right? When you think in terms of like what we think about like regaining our strength and regenerating our body to get ready for the next set, but that's the whole point, right? They're trying to create this thing where 3 minutes in, 4 minutes in, they start to get a little deeper water and they have to really work at it, okay, and get stronger when they're not in their strongest state. So when we think of this from the cardio strength perspective or the metabolic resistance training perspective, this is really good, but there's a down part to it, and it goes back to the 50-10 and the 45-10s and the negative rest stuff that you saw. Once the exercise that I'm doing at the top of the minute, the EMOM, right, once it goes past 30, you're in trouble, okay? From jump street, from the first set, you're in trouble because you're now at a negative rest. So say it takes me 35 seconds. I only have 25 seconds now, and then I got to be expected to do that same thing again that took me 35, which in turn is going to take me more than 35 the second set and even more the third and the fourth and the fifth and the sixth and the eighth set, okay? So that now that the deficit gets greater, so my work period gets longer and my rest period gets shorter. That's like a total recipe for disaster. So I use this example, okay? If anybody's familiar with Josh Hankins' Ultimate Sandbag Clean and Press Test, right? And this is a test, you can look it up. It's basically, it's one of the most challenging things I've ever done. It's one of the most challenging things I've had to program for and sit back and check my ego at the door and basically start fresh. I mean, you know, a almost 50-year-old guy to be humbled by this 100-pound bag and have to change his whole mindset and think and problem solve, okay? So this is what the test was for me. I had to do 100 clean and presses, which is a very technical lift, because if you mess up the lift, it comes off your fist, you don't press it right, that rep doesn't count. I do 50 reps in 5 minutes. So you're like, okay, makes sense. I just got to divvy up those reps. Well, instinctually, you want to say, you want to go, well, I'm fresh, so I'm going to bang out 17 right off the bat because I could do that. 17, 18 reps, let's just do it, right? Well, that's what I tried to do the first few times, and it's over because I've front-loaded the fatigue so much, I've drained my body so much that I have nothing left. So now I'm trying to do a couple of reps here and a couple of reps here and a couple of reps here, and you end up 20-something reps short, right, by the end of the 5 minutes, because that time's, you know, time is the most brutal thing in the world. It doesn't stop for anybody. So it's just going to keep going. So then I thought, okay, well, maybe I won't do. I'm going to leave some in the tank, and then I'm going to, the next one, I'll do the same thing, leave some in the tank. So you still, you know, maybe get 14, and then maybe I get 12, and then maybe I get 7, and then I get 4, and then I'm missing reps because I'm fatigued, and then the time's up again, and I'm only at 32 reps. So I said, I have to create a system here where I'm going to treat this like an EMOM. So every minute on the minute, I'm going to do 10, okay? No matter how good it feels, even if I feel like, oh, man, I could do 11, and I could get one in the bank. Well, I could do 12 and get 2 in the bank. I'm not going to do it because I'm going to be disciplined. Remember that in that one slide. I'm going to be disciplined because I know this is a journey, right? Not a destination right now. I got to make my way through this path. So I get 10, takes me about 30, 35 seconds. Now, I'm already kind of breaking the rule, right? But it's the only thing I can do. I have to get 50. So the only positive I have is that I know if the first one takes me 30, 35 seconds, the second 10 is going to take me a little longer. So, right, I am going to be in a deficit, but this is a test, right? This isn't a workout. If it was a workout, I would never program it this way because I wouldn't be able to do it very long, more than 5 minutes or maybe even 3 or 4 minutes to stay on that same temp pace. So what I did and how I passed it was I got 10 at the top of the first minute, the second minute, the third minute. And I'm telling you right now, there's, you know, a lot of adversity that's going on. It's one of the worst things in the world. You know, when you get to that 20-something rep range area, it gets really, really nasty. You want to quit. You know, you start questioning everything about your life. So, but the only redeeming value in my head, I kept thinking, was get the 40th rep done at the top of that fourth minute. You know, even if it takes me, you know, 45, 50 seconds to do. So I think, oh man, I only have 10 seconds rest for that next beep, right? So what I did was I rationalized in my head, I have a whole minute to get 10. And I've never taken more than 45 seconds to get 10. So I can do this. And what happened was when I did it, it literally took me the entire 60 seconds to get it. Because I'm at 6 and I have to stop and I'm pausing, I'm holding the bag. So you know, the me problem solving and figuring that out really helped me going forward. This was a few years ago, to say, how can I create training protocols with that similar intensity? Because that's a heavy, heavy bag. With the loading that's in there, and the volume's not, you know, that's a lot of volume in a very short period of time, but that's not a training program, that's a training test, okay? This, like, Tabata would be like a finisher. It's not something we think we're expected to do very often. It's not something we're expected to do more than one time, okay? So just wanted to give you the background on that and understand this concept at EMOM, that I'm trying to still stay on the positive side of the halfway mark. Okay. If you could do that, you have a fighting chance. Okay. All right. So here's a sample EMOM, and this kind of inspired my concept of metabolic resistance training. Because what I found was that what I was always doing, kind of subconsciously, was picking a load that was good and solid, a rep range that was good and hard, but I was also making sure that I could complete those reps of whatever it was on the positive side of the 30, okay? And then the more I looked at it, the more I started realizing that I was more like a 1 to 2 work rest. So it was taking me maybe 20 seconds or less so that I was able to regenerate and do it again. And then you'll see as we start to progress from this, it gets even a little deeper and I get a little heavier and the workouts get a little shorter so that my rest can be a little bit longer, okay? Oops, let me back up. So here is the EMOM and, you know, emphasis loading, maintaining positive rests, right? And so what I did was I kind of have one barbell with a set weight of 155 pounds here. And I'm thinking this is a good solid set, you know, of muscle snatches for me. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to do that. I could go heavier, sure. I could do more reps, sure. But then I'd be kind of front loading all that fatigue again, okay? So now I'm going every time the clock beeps on the top of the minute, rows are lighter so I could do more volume with it, right? So you'll see I got explosive, I got push, I got pull, you know, I got to have hip dominant, that kind of stuff, all that good stuff, everything that we try to get into our programming, right? So I get 10 rows. I think I'm going to go to strict presses now. Same thing, this is much harder than the rows, so, you know, I'm still trying to stay on the positive side of 30 on everything. Usually, like I said, maybe 15, 20 seconds on most of them to keep me honest, but still kind of keep a decent weight. Here's another push, and you'll see I have a couple of for each, I think. And same thing, this is a cross core. It's a little tougher than a TRX because it saws. So I could do, you know, good solid push-ups on there, 10, right? you know, think of a regular rep taking about 2 seconds, it's going to be about a 20-second set. Little hinging, but now I can double up. There's double 70s there. So a little staggered swing for 10. And you'll see it's pretty strategic. I'm making sure that I'm staying on that positive side because I know I've got this circuit that I got to get done a few times. Here's a fist hold squat, right? And this is a 130-pound burly bag, pretty tough. Yes, I could go faster. Yes, I could go a little heavier. Yes, I could go more volume, but then I might not be able to fight another day, right? So I want to make sure that I'm kind of staying in that groove. Here's something that's more like a core, but an explosive. And I know that I'm going to have to do 5 on each side. It's going to take time. It really gasses you. So I'm being, you know, maybe I could have done 7 or 8 on each side, but then that might have, you know, drained me too much for the next round. Neutral grip pull-ups. Same thing. I think this is a pretty good rep range for me personally. Yeah, I could do more. Yeah, I could maybe put a little weight on there, but I'm not going to do it for this particular one. You'll see I will when I dial in a 15:45 later. All right, so I'm kind of still staying on that positive side of the clock. I throw in a mobility because I really like to do this as a break at the end of each round, right? So I want to make sure I'm staying honest because this is not easy, right? Mobility for a lot of people takes energy and effort. And it worked out perfect, works out perfectly because this kind of recharges me before I go back to my muscle snatches again. So this is an EMOM. I think this is a pretty good example of metabolic resistance training because I'm messing around with loads. I'm not doing 20, you know, TRX push-ups in a high angle. I'm actually trying to push the loading a little bit, okay? All right, so let's revisit density sessions. I talk about this in cardio strength training, and I really, really love density sessions, but they're a little harder to dial in. They're a little harder, especially if you're training somebody, to dial in everything just right, a little tougher with groups to make sure everybody's staying honest. So with density sessions is we pick an exercise in each of our categories, right? I pick a loading. So say I have dumbbell bench for my pushing. I have chin-ups for my pull. I have goblet squats for my knee dominant like that. I would pick a load, set it up that I'm going to do 8 reps with, and it should be about my 10 or 12 rep max load. So, you know, if I grab 70-pound dumbbells on my dumbbell bench press, I could definitely get 8, right? There's not a day where I'm not going to get 8, but usually I can only get it maybe 10 or 11, 12 times max, okay? That's kind of keep me honest. And this is the hard part, is like figuring that out, right? Maybe I know I can always do 10 pull-ups, always. So I'm going to do 8, and I'm going to just throw a 5-pound weight or a 5-pound vest on, right? And I'm going to do 8. And I'm always going to be able to get 8. But as the set goes on, as the sets go on, as the rounds go on, it's going to get heavier and heavier. So if you start off with an 8 RM, you're never going to get it even the second time through. So this is a great way for us to morph the two things, right? And our thing is to push the tempo. And our goal is to average about a set of anywhere from a minute to a minute and a half, depending on what the exercise is. If I do, you know, a set of pull-ups, I can bang out 8 pretty quick. It's not going to take me that long. It might take me between 15 and 20 seconds. It's going to give me a good solid 40 seconds of rest like you saw on that EMOM. If I do something unilateral, right? So if I do a single arm bench press, well, I'm going to get 8. I'm going to switch sides. I'm going to get 8. It's going to take me twice as long now. Now it's going to kind of chew into my time. So it's going to even out in the end. But, you know, like I say, if it's 10 exercises, say we did 10 total sets of that, you would probably come in somewhere between, I'd say, you know, 12 minutes and 13, 12 to 13 minutes, I would think, to get that whole thing done. Okay. If you're coming in at 8 minutes, it's too light. If you're coming in, you know, 17 minutes, 16 minutes, probably something's too heavy in there, right? Or you're taking too much time, too much downtime. You're turning into a traditional lifting session, which is not what we want. So there's a lot of variables we have to control there. I love it for, you know, advanced lifters, people that are really dialed in with what they need to do with their weights, and are real good about their discipline and their honesty. Okay, but I found a better way than that. Time sets. I think people respond to time. Okay. I think one of the great things about the human mind is if I say, hey, Can you grab those battle ropes? And if I tell you only have to do this for 10 seconds, can you go as hard as you can for me and leave everything on the ground on the ropes right now? And I'm going to give you 50 seconds of rest, right? People are going to respond to that and go, yeah, 10 seconds. I can count that in my head and do it. But if you say, hey, I need you to do this for a minute. It's a different mindset. I need you to do this for 45 seconds. It's a different mindset now, okay? You're going to get effort, but I'm going to have the, you know, we want to survive. Our body wants to survive. Our brain is not going to let us kill ourselves. So it's going to allow us to do a certain amount of intensity so that I can do it again or do something else afterwards and not just lay in a puddle on the ground. So 30-30s are great. And I think this is a great starting protocol for people, believe it or not, and a great protocol for people who are well-trained because you can really push yourself, and especially if you dial in the exercises nicely. It's really, really taxing. It's one of the toughest things that I ever do in my own training. It's a great one for me to do when I'm on the road because you can almost find implements in any fitness center in a hotel. Even body weight stuff works. But for the newbie, it mandates them working. I can make sure they're working for 30, and then I can coach them and cue them and rest them and motivate them for 30. Okay? And yes, it's going to look different. They may, you know, it might be battle ropes and it might not look very violent. It might be TRX rows and they might be almost vertical and when they're doing their rows. But they're getting strength work in. It's relative to their strength and their fitness and their work capacity, and they're only going to get better at it. Okay? So it's great for untrained. Oh, it's great for fit. And my guideline is I want to pick stuff that I'm going to try to get volume. Okay? So if it's TRX push-ups or rows, if it's body saws, if it's ab wheel, if it's med ball slams, if it's banded jumps or just regular body weight jumps, I want to have a loading and a tempo that's going to keep them in this 12 to 20 rep range, which is fast. Swings are great. Kettlebell swings are great for this. Kettlebell swings are one of those exercises where really no matter how light you go or heavy you go, you really can only go so fast, okay? So I say like a lot of times we see in kettlebell swings people getting about 18 reps. 17, 18, 19, maybe 20 reps of swings in a 30-second bout, right? So it fits nicely in that little sweet spot there with the reps, all right? So if you have a newbie and you say, we're going to do these five exercises, we're going to do this four times through, you've taken this person through 20 sets of work. This is probably something they haven't done 20 sets of work or 20 sets of anything in their lives, right? Or at least in the last decade. You know, and now they're doing it and they're accomplishing that. There's no way in the world you could tell me that's not going to build and put money in that work capacity bank, okay? They're going to get better and better and better at it. You know, I would say live on these 30-30s with your newbies until they really start to establish and start to get that strength and get the wits about them to know which weights to grab if they're going to go lighter or heavier heavier or lower volumes, okay? So here's a sample 30-30. You'll see kind of how we strategically picked the exercises. And this is David Padilla and Joel Gunderman. Joel is one of our master trainers. So jump rope's a great drill if you can jump rope. Imaginary jump rope's a great drill. Jumping jacks are a great drill for somebody who's a newbie. Okay. Here's just a rip, triple strike. So we're going 30, you'll rest, and then I'll go 30 on the other side. Once again, right, rotational core. Dynamic movement, right? He's going to be sucking some wind at the end of that 30. And these are two very, very fit guys, okay? And this is a circuit that will just gas them. Here's Joel, right? Kettlebell swings. That's a beast, right? So he's doing a lot of work. We do that math. He's probably getting 19, 20 reps in this 30-second bout. Here's just a pushing combo. You know, we got push-ups, flies. This is the cross core. It's much tougher, like I said. It's tougher to stabilize. Push-ups, fly, Superman. I like to combo this, right? We don't even need to count reps. Here's a kind of another, we call reactive core, right, around the world and see how Joel's really getting a chance to work his lower body mechanics for the rotational moves. 35-pound bag. Pretty tough work here. Here's just a pulling combo. And you'll see Dave is doing face pulls, W's, Y's, T's, alternating arms, right? Just really, really hitting backside nicely. Ab wheel's a great exercise. you're going to be on the lower end of the rep range. You know, you're going to be in that 12, 13, 14 rep range. Just really try to get good range of motion. Here's a max lunge, the water bag. He can really, it's not too heavy, it's about 60. He can really get a good swing on it if he wants, which is what I like to do with that bag. Good knee dominant movement. Here's another other category, right? Just ropes. Just go, Joel going to work on that 30 seconds. But it's relative, right? He's pretty fit. Your rope might not look nearly as violent as that with your client. So there's just an example of getting all the categories in, right? Our knee dominant, hip dominant, explosive, a couple of different cores even, and other, you know, the other move with the ropes, other move with the jump rope. So these are ways for us to really incorporate a lot of really good, solid exercises, majority of them strength exercises, to get somebody to create some great afterburn. And on this, especially in this one, for newbies, is to create, you know, that base, right? That conditioning base. Get them stronger, get them fitter. Okay, so here's this Hurt study, and this is the thing that gave me the giant cartoon light bulb over my head, right? Reading this study and saying, what was it that was so magical about this study? So let me just kind of go over it with you here, and you guys can read the red. So they looked at what they called a high-intensity interval resistance training group and a traditional resistance training group. And they looked at it at, respiratory ratio. They basically looked at elevations in metabolism, right? So they wanted to look at that at the end of the – immediately after exercise and then every hour following that to see how significant it was. Was it humming along like a like an engine? Was it dying off quickly? Okay, so the Hurt group, this is that non-traditional one, that high-intensity interval group, consisted of, this was a set, 6 reps to failure. So it was a 6 RM, okay? They went to failure and then stopped or racked it or put down the weight or racked away. Most of it was machines in the study, which is another thing I'll talk about. They rested 20 seconds, and then they did as many as they could again, and they were getting between 2 and 3. Most were getting 2 reps. They rested 20 seconds, and then they did that again, and the average is about 2. So basically they went 6, rest 2, rest 2. So 10 reps, but basically 3 little sets to failure. 1 set and then 2 mini sets to failure. So understand this, guys. Like Tabata, when Tabata did his stuff, they were going 170% of their VO2 max. They weren't keeping stuff in the tank. They weren't pacing themselves. Well, when you're going a 6 RM, that's a 6 RM. It's impossible for them to get a 7th. And when they got those 2 at the second time, it was impossible to get a 3rd. Okay, so not only were they in deep, deep water, they were in deep water 3 times in 1 set. Okay, so let's just keep that in perspective before we think how simple this is and how easy it is. And I'm going to throw this in tomorrow into my training. Because most people in the world have never been in that deep of water in their lives, okay? Especially when we talk about general population people who haven't been pushed that way. So it's pretty remarkable that they were able to get that out of them in the first place, okay? So what they did was there was a total of 7 sets, all right? Basically, they did a couple exercises for a couple of sets, and they had 7 total sets, but the exercises weren't great. It was like a seated machine, like shoulder press. There was like a seated back extension machine. There was a leg press. There was like a lat pull down type machine. So they were all machines, and the exercise selection was questionable, right? Like I could think of a lot better ones to do. So those are going to be some of the questions I'll ask about this at the end. So they compared this group that did 7 sets the way I just described it to a group that did 8 exercises, 4 sets of each, so 32 sets, 8 to 12 reps per set with a minute to 2 minutes rest between. Okay? So they measured the energy expenditure, right, the post-workout burn, and they basically looked at it, and they saw a drop-off pretty quickly with the traditional group, and they saw significant increases continuing to go on 22 hours post-exercise with the Hurt group. Okay, nothing on the other group at that point, not even close. So results, the Hirsch group showed greater significant increase in resting energy expenditure at 22 hours compared to traditional. and even their resting their resting vitals were lower later on. So we saw a conditioning effect from that, from the hard work. Okay, so the conclusions, they suggest that shorter HIIT sessions may increase this post burn after exercise than when compared to traditional, and therefore improve fat oxidation. Okay, the shorter time commitment may also help reduce one of the major barriers to exercise, which is time. Right, we know time's the number one factor, number one reason people say. So, 7 sets compared to 32. Right, so this made me think. What was so magical about this? It wasn't the exercises, because they were pretty bad. Okay, it wasn't the number of sets, because it's very low. So it makes me wonder, what if we would have picked better exercises? What if we would have done more sets, right? What if we just did 2 sets of all those exercises or something, or something where, to the effect that maybe they finished doing 15 or 16 sets instead of 7, okay? Maybe they don't need to rest 2.5 minutes between those bouts, okay? Maybe they only need to do a set of 6 RM and then maybe one more set to failure after 20 seconds. Maybe we don't need that third one, okay? Those are all the questions I kind of ask myself as we go. But it all comes back to one thing, and the main thing, it wasn't volume. The other group did a ton more volume than them. They did tons of more sets. They were under tension way longer than them, right? When you look at all that. The major difference was the intensity and the loading. The HIIT group just did heavier stuff, a lot heavier stuff, and to failure, to failure, to failure, okay? The training time, it wasn't that, right? It was 32 minutes for the HIIT and 62 minutes for the traditional. And if we break down that 32, guys, there was 7 sets of work in there. There's 2.5 minutes per set. That's over 14, that's like 16, 18 minutes of rest. So half of that 32 minutes is rest, right? So they're only actually under work load for half that time. So something magical has to be happening in the form of the intensity, all right? So this became my kind of driving force here. So here's where we're going. And this is where I think we're going to go, guys. And you can quote me on this when I look like a genius in a few years and everybody's doing this. And we're seeing more of these protocols. I'm going to go on record. I'm going to go out on a limb and say this is going to be the new gold standard. When we start talking about metabolic resistance training, it's not going to be burpees and mountain climbers and star jumps. Okay, it's going to be. It never has been that, but it has been some kind of like a morph of the two, and occasionally doing some weights, you know. But usually it's higher reps. I'm saying that it's going to be work rest time prescriptions with specific loading parameters, all right? And their loading parameters are going to be heavy, and it's going to be intense, and it's going to be the stuff that makes that little voice in your head kind of question and ask you what the hell you're doing, okay? So time sets, set work rest times with a positive rest, a minimum of a 1 to 2 work to rest. At least rest at least twice as much as you work, okay? I like to go even more. I like to go 3 times. I like to go 15:45. I love a 15:45 protocol. I think it will change your entire life in terms of how strong and how fit and how your body will change shape. Okay, and I have enough trainers and enough people that told me going through doing it personally, I've completely changed my body by doing almost exclusively this. Okay, so here's my goal, and this is kind of what we're looking at. In that time prescription, 15 seconds or 20 seconds, my goal is to complete 5 to 8 reps in that period, pushing hard. You're not purposely going slow. You're doing a controlled descent, controlled eccentrics, but we're always, in every exercise, in everything I've ever talked about in my life, we will push through the concentric as fast as possible. I do not believe in slowed down concentrics, okay? We're not pausing at the bottom. We're doing traditional reps. Traditional rep, generally take 2 seconds, a second down, second up. Right? If it gets heavier, it's going to take more than a second down, second up. Okay? It might take a second down, a second and a half up. So along the lines, it's going to even out. So if I say, here's my guidelines. If in that time period you cannot complete 5 reps, it's too heavy. Right? So especially if you come out the first time and you barely get 5, we're going to drop that load because you're not going to get it the next time. Okay? If you can get more than 8 reps, it's too light. So if you come out that first time and you're like, you get to 7, 8, you still have 4 or 5 seconds left and you get 9, 10, 11 reps, cool. We learned our lesson, right? We will mark that down that you did 11 reps with that 60-pound kettlebell in your goblet squats, but you're grabbing the 70 on the next one, okay? And then you're going to get back in that rep range. So it's kind of easy. We have a little bit of leeway. We have a little bit of cushion, but it's going to get me in that nice power, strength, hypertrophy kind of zone, right, where I can work on that. And then the time, the beeper is going to keep me honest, okay? It's going to keep me honest. So it's going to get tougher, guys. It's going to get tougher. And the water's going to get a little deeper, and the tides, you know, and the currents are going to get a little rougher. But this is the whole process, right, that we're talking about. And this is not a newbie beginner protocol. This is something that you're working into your programming after you've established somebody's built up a good enough base. They're good and strong in their 30-30s. They have some wherewithal about them, about knowing how much to put on the bar, what kind of kettlebell to grab, what kind of dumbbells to grab. That, okay? So there is one exception, and that is if I pick an exercise that's faster. Kettlebell swings, kettlebell banded swings are one of my favorites to do in a 15-second protocol or a 20-second protocol, but they are rapid, right? So even with a beast kettlebell, which is usually the biggest one you're going to see, you know, you're going to get more than that. You're going to get 11, 12 reps in a set, right? In that time period. If you pick something like plyometric push-ups as your push, you're going to get more than 8. Okay. If you pick something like banded vertical jumps for your explosive, you're going to get more than 8. Okay. Because I want good rapid fire jumps. I want full triple quadruple extension. I want to decelerate, but I want to go right to that next jump. So you're probably going to get 10 plus at least. Okay. In that time period. And when we say 20, there shouldn't be that whole lot of difference between a 15-second set and a 20, but it's more significant than you think. So people will go, well, 45, 50, or 15, 45, how's that so different than 20, 40? It really isn't, but it's 5 seconds, right? People go, it's only 5 seconds. Well, it's 5 seconds less work and 5 seconds more rest. It's not like me saying you're going to do 20 seconds of work and I'm going to give you 45 seconds of rest, right? That would just be 5 seconds more rest, but I'm giving you less work time and more rest time. Okay. So I'm going to expect I would say there's good news and bad news. Good news is you're going to get a bigger work rest ratio. The bad news is you got to go heavier and harder. Okay. You got to earn that one to three versus the 1 to 2. Okay. So banded swings, banded jumps, plyo pushups, rip trainer, those types of things are going to be faster. And I always, and this is my rule, is the asterisk goes, The velocity, the tempo, the explosive nature of it trumps the loading volume part, okay? And there's only very few exercises that are going to fall into those categories anyway, and those are basically them. So here's a 20-40. It's not the greatest, but I used one bag, okay? This is a 90-pound bag, and so the rep ranges are a little bit higher, and that's what I was going to say earlier. In a 20-40, we can actually scoot the 5 to 8 to more like a 6 to 10, right? And I think that's a good way to start, a gateway for somebody to get into this, is to kind of do that 6 to 10 range so they're not having to really crush themselves and, you know, kind of psychologically go over that hump of grabbing that kettlebell they've never grabbed before or the dumbbells they've never grabbed on to do a push press before with that weight, okay? So I'm using this, but you'll see I'm kind of staying in you see it's load, obviously it's load, and I'm doing a couple of exercises for each category here. So here's just a muscle clean. It's not a very heavy weight for me, but I'm not purposely going slow, and I'm getting, you know, 8 to 10 in my set, okay? I could go a little bit heavier. Snatches take a little longer, so I'm getting less. This actually kind of sits nice in that sweet spot, right, with the reps. Snatches are obviously much tougher with that bag. That fist hold squat, I'm not purposely going slow. I'm just kind of going, right? I can't really go a whole lot. I could probably go a little faster, but I do know I have to fight another day. Here's that max lunge. It's not a crazy weight, so I'm able to get a pretty good tempo going with it. But I'm getting about 5 or 6 per side. That's just a press on the fist, which makes it a little bit harder. So you got to think about the balancing on the fists a little bit there. Bent over rows are the easiest on this one, so I'm kind of doing an explosive with a pause just so I don't get too many reps. Yeah, I probably, you know, I could get a, if I was doing another implement, I would definitely be able to get a better pull. Here's a nice move with the holding the front hold, Zercher style, hinging movement, right, with that good morning. And then just a walk, figure eight walks, right? This is like an other category, nice way to break up that set before I start the next round. So I've kind of doubled up on a lot of the categories, but definite strength training, right? And definitely staying in that sweet spot, in that wheelhouse of the metabolic and the resistance. Okay, so it's a great way to start before you'll see that the next one. Okay, so I'm going to let this run so you guys can hear this, hear me talk it through, and then you'll see me go through. And this is me really now. These are actually I've gotten to the point where these are so tough. I try to get two of these in a week, right? So I try to get like two 30-30s and then two of these a week. And then the other 3 days in the week, I kind of like do whatever. You'll see a 60-60 that I'll do sometimes. Sometimes it's just, you know, mobility work. Sometimes it's just maybe some Olympic lifts. Sometimes I'm teaching my interval cycle class. So that might just be it for the day. So I'm trying to get two of these in a week. And I'm telling you right now, from a psychological standpoint, much like complexes, these are the things I try to avoid. I always try to find a way out of these workouts. So that's when I know things are really going to be effective and efficient, is when I have that feeling about them. And at first I thought, well, it's great. I only have to work 15 seconds. Yeah, and you know, 24 sets later, I pick eight things to do, and 24 minutes later, it's over. Well, you know, it's a different animal, and you'll see it in this. I'm going to let this run. You guys enjoy. There's the exercises.
You can hear me. Depending on these and MRT, I'm really trying to preach this to today's break it down. Hey guys, those today's break it down is one of my favorites, right? 1545, because I'm really, depending on these and MRT, I'm really trying to preach this to trainers and coaches that I talk to really get the benefits out of that density / circuit time thing. So we want to set our rep ranges 5 to 8 or 10, but there's a couple of exceptions in today's workout. The rip trainer, which is very fast, but very explosive. So we put the asterisk next to it because of the velocity. So it's like double unders, right? They're going to gas you, but you're going to get a lot of them. So I've got plyo push-ups, I got rip trainer, and I have double kettlebell skier swings. Heavy as heck, two beasts. So 212 pounds on the swings. I think I was getting about 10 on the swings. About 10, maybe 11 on the rip trainer, and a little more on the plyo push-ups, maybe like 12, 13. I might have even got 14 once. So pull-ups, though, weighted pull-ups, 35 pounds. I was getting 5, maybe 5.5. Heavy hang muscle snatch, 180 pounds. Getting 5 consistently. Ab wheel, standing ab wheel, much slower. Getting 5. I think I might have got 6 the first round, but I think I got 5 in the set you guys see. And it's right in the sweet spot, right? I'm not going under 5. I could have been close on the muscle snatches, but felt pretty good today. So whether it's 15-20 or 15-45 or 20-40, we still want to stay in that sweet spot. If you're getting less than 5, it's too heavy. If you're getting more than 8-10, if it's a strength move like a pull-up or a TRX push-up or a bear hug squat, if you're getting more than that, we want to load it up a little bit more. All right? Take a peek. Do work.
Okay, I'll talk this through. So I'm going muscle snatches, right? And I've just kind of been in the zone that day. I just kind of throwing weights around. So worked out perfect timing-wise, and I kind of left a little bit of time at the end when you see me put down. It's gassing, guys. It's no joke, and now your rest is already going, right? So standing ab wheel changes the game. We're making sure that we, you know, staying honest here, trying to get a pretty good extension. And like I said, getting 5-6 reps, perfect sweet spot. turning that core movement into a real strength move now. Double beasts, right? Got skier swings. This is no joke on a hinging move, but still, because of the tempo, like I said, swings are a little faster, so I am going to be out of that 8-rep range. So I'm getting 10, 11 reps on this. Just tough to hang on to sometimes. Plyo push-ups, kind of going up and down off that big burly bag. My feet just naturally slide on that floor, so I don't have sliders on or anything. Works out nicely. 13, 14 reps per set. There's the asterisk on these ones, right? But still such a great upper body pushing movement. Here's a rip, and that's a double X band. It's kind of a monster band. So it's a lot of resistance. So I'm just hacking away at this, right? Just getting crazy, crazy explosive rotational core. I stayed away from a knee dominant on this exercise because I was kind of hurting my knee a little bit. But I generally like to do a really, really heavy max lunge. And I do one side, and then I rest a 45, then I do the other side. So I'm getting about 5 or 6 on each side. These are really tough, right? Because it really kind of messes with your breathing. Weighted chins. I'm pretty big, so this is a lot of work for me here. I mean, they're well over 300 pounds on the pulls now. Kind of turned timed out. The buzzer was right there before I'm starting that last rep. So that's kind of, to me, the epitome of what a 15:45 should look like. It's a pretty good exercise selection. And if you tell me you can't get stronger on that, I'm gonna have an argument with you, because I've gotten so much stronger over the past few years. Josh Henkin's been doing these protocols. His wife Jess's been doing them. Lots of coaches that I know doing them. A lot of people doing them with their clients and seeing tremendous results. So I know that we're on the bright track here, guys. And I went out on a limb earlier and saying that this was going to be kind of the gold standard. So as far as structure, this goes back to just my basic programming, right? I just have my, you know, I have my general six, you know, my explosive movement, which is anything of rapid triple quadruple extension, hip dominant, hinging or hinging plus knee flexion movement, right? Posterior chain, knee dominant, squatting, step up, lunging, all those variations, every plane, bilateral, unilateral, push both horizontal and vertical, pull both horizontal and vertical, core from both that anti-extension planking pillar strength to the anti-rotation strength, okay, like you saw on the rip trainer. And that's violent, you know, rotation, you know, internally rotating the back hip, squashing the bug with the back foot, like those mechanics, right? We're not just trying to like fix it in place like we would if we're hanging on to a pal-off press. The other I like to break up, right? So that's your battle ropes, that's your carries, your jump rope on the 30-30s. There's a lot of things that could be other mobility work even, okay? So this leads us kind of into the structure of the concept of discipline. Be smart, right? Common sense to pick good exercises and good loads that are realistic. Here's a rule. If you feel like you don't need that 45 seconds of rest, like it's a lot, then you're doing it wrong, right? If you feel like, I don't want you to feel like it's not enough. It'll feel like it's not enough as it goes, but early on you might feel you're ready to go. You're still going to be puffing, but if it feels like, man, I'm wasting time, then you got to go back and go back to that honesty, discipline part of it and put more weight on or be more honest about your effort on that set, okay? We say 3 or 4 rounds max, and that depends on what we're doing. If you did 6 exercises, all you know, bilateral, then it would be 6 rounds, and you do 3 rounds would be 18 minutes, 4 rounds would be 24, but a lot of times it's unilateral. So you saw the rip took 2. If I do a max lunge, it would be 2 because I would do one side at a time. If I did a heavy single arm dumbbell bench, which I do a lot of times on these, that's 1 on each side. So a lot of times your rounds might be 8 or 9. So that's going to be 3 rounds, it'd be 24 to 27 minutes, and that's going to be it. I never want to go over 30. You should never be able to go over 30. If you can, then you just need to reevaluate what you're doing in that workout and your intensity and that honesty, discipline part, okay? So think heavier. Think very quality sets. Think about getting stronger. Think about getting, you know, toning. God, I hate that word, but toning means body shaping, right? Changing, hypertrophy, fat loss, afterburn, basically, and then the concept of time. I don't really have to think. I just go, right? If I'm training somebody, I'm counting. I'm going to count the reps for sure. Maybe, you know, and then you just track it and you say, hey, I'm averaging about, like, I already know now, I've done this for so long that how many reps I'm going to get. Now, you know, sometimes that muscle snatch, some days I'm not as strong. I might have to drop the weight to be able to still get five. Okay. There's going to be days when, you know, I might be able to throw on an extra 5 pounds on that chin up and still get that five. All right. But I'm in a sweet spot there and I kind of know where I am on those. Okay. I have found that people respond and thrive on time, right? It's a no-brainer. They think, even when I'm teaching interval classes, they're just listening for the buzzers, man. I'm telling them what the buzzers are going to do. I'm not going to lie to them. I'm not going to trick them. I'm not going to say, get up out of the seat and push as hard as you can. And don't ask me how long. I'm not going to tell you. People don't respond well to that stuff, okay? So what about a 60-60? Well, that seems kind of like a long time, but I think it's good for people to extend that work bout. You don't need as many, right? But to work continuously for 60, whether it's battle ropes or carries or jump rope or just doing a squat to stand mobility drill over and over for 60 seconds, right? I mean, it's good stuff. So we start thinking about even swings with a lighter weight. Like, these are things that can really, really help us in terms of kind of building work capacity in a little bit of a different spectrum, right? A little, obviously the loading and the intensity, the tempo changes, but we're working continuously for 60. And it's something that sometimes people have a really difficult time with, but I think from a conditioning standpoint, it's really, really good. So I really like this as a recovery or a movement style circuit. So we pick exercises, be strategic, and you're not doing muscle snatches. You're not doing pull-ups, right? So you're thinking about things that we can do continuously. And on a 60-60, I'm not even going to keep you to that. I'm not even going to say you need to do all those six categories because it might not even be feasible, you know, to do continuous rows, TRX rows for 60. I mean, you could do it, but, you know, I would definitely be changing it up, doing all kinds of different combos. I'd be more vertical in my positioning. But I like the mobility stuff, and you'll see in this clip that I just kind of do a lot of different stuff that I feel comfortable doing for 60 seconds, okay? So carries, battle ropes, kettlebell swings, mobility drills. You'll see I'm on the aerosol bike. Not a great thing to do. You got to have the discipline to kind of stay at the lower end of that. Otherwise, it's going to just ruin the rest of your exercises. Heart rate's up, but not nearly at the intensity it normally is on a 30-30 or any of the other circuits you saw. We're sweating, we're moving. I love this for Sundays. I love it. I call them hangover workouts. Like, just get it there, get the sweat on, and end up doing, you know, 20 sets of work, which is a 40-minute workout, right? And remember, guys, your body is working during the rest period. And that's the thing. That's why you see so many of those crazy workouts like I showed you, those Pinterest ones at the beginning, because people believe that you just have to keep pounding and pounding and pounding, and there's something inherently bad about rest. And rest is really where the magic's going to happen. And if you just look at that hurt study, I think that says it all. You know, earn the rest. You got to earn the rest, though. If you're not working and honest in your effort, then the rest is kind of a moot point. All right, so here's a sample 60-60. We're thinking volume. We're thinking sweat. We're thinking prolonged bouts, right? Movement stuff. Let this run a little bit here. You see kind of a variation here. There's all my moves, deck squats, aerosol. I do kind of round the world with the sandbell. I hang on the bar, battle ropes, staggered swings, rolling planks, and jump rope. Okay, I could just hold a plank if I wanted to. So this is just a variation of that. This is a pretty heavy, I think it's a 35-pound sandbell. So there's a lot of deceleration involved, but I love just the rotational aspects. And you can see my feet on both ends when I turn in each direction. And there's just such a reactive core property to this. I love the vertical core stuff. There's stuff on your feet that's going to tax the core. Here's the bike, and I actually hung on to a pretty good wattage. But you just got to know that it's going to wear on you, and that 60 seconds rest is not going to feel very adequate after something like this if you're hanging on to something with that high a wattage for a whole minute. But it's a good one. The skier G is a good one too. There's just a rolling plank, right? Just to kind of take the boredom out of holding a plank. Kind of turning, we can go rotate. You see the feet go into that side plank, almost like a T push-up style, but just staying on the elbows. And I'm also kind of just working on opening up through the chest. But it's a great core exercise. Battle rope's a great one. And I like to just change up moves almost like about every 15 seconds or so. Just change the patterns. And it's just great. I mean, it's a great exercise for everybody, right? There's not much of a learning curve there, but ropes, you just go. I like to work on my grip strength. I like to hang. It's very taxing for somebody so heavy. So changing up, changing, you'll see I'm changing positions. I'll grab the square end of the bars too. That's a long time to hang. So for me, it's just kind of changing up. See, I'm changing that grip there. It's like time stands still when you're, 270 pounds. So here's just, like I said, swings are good. It's going to change the game. I'm not going to take that beast and swing it, but I'm going to do different variations. Sometimes I'll go figure eights and single arm, alternating and, put my feet together and go alternating, side to side across the midline. But just, continuously doing these loaded movements that aren't crazy load. Here's just deck squats, right? So, deck squats, I kind of like just from the aspect that it gets you in that deep squat position. I like to kind of sit down here and just kind of get in that position and hold there and try to really softly put my butt down. So I have an aerobic step that you could sit on. It's nice to do that with them. And then just grab a heavier weight. I just have an 8-pound kettlebell in my hand right there. Because they do make 8-pound kettlebells, by the way. I don't know why they do, but it's a good paperweight. But for me, I'm just trying to make that get up a lot harder, right? And try to work that. I'm pushing out with my elbows. I'm inside my knees too. Can't really tell. Jump rope, right? Kind of takes us a little longer duration. Changes things up nicely. And I just say, just keep moving. Do your thing there. So picture doing that a few rounds through. So it's nice, solid little work, bout. And you could say, well, I'm only doing 15 sets. It's 30-minute workout. It's only 15 sets, though. I'm so used to doing 30 sets in a 30-30 and 30 minutes, but the sets are twice as long, right? So it's nice for us to pull that in sometimes. So periodization, we don't really have to worry about it. Most people have a client twice a week. You could do that heavy density, 20, 40, 15, 45 stuff twice a week, no problem. If you have a 3-day-a-week deal, I like throwing in a 30-30 in there. If you have a 4-day, you can kind of do the two heavies still, keep a 30-30, maybe do that 60-60. So there's, it automatically does it. You're not going back to back to back to back with those heavy ones. Be good about the exercise selection, changing them up. First of all, you start with a lot of stuff that's going to be real positive for your client, your athlete, whoever you're working with, and that they're comfortable with, that they're comfortable loading with, right? If somebody's terrible at a specific squatting or lunging pattern, that would be a terrible exercise to pick for them to do in something, one of these heavier ones, and say, let's start loading the heck out of that thing, right? So we want to make sure we're good with that. So contact me, guys. I have a membership site at CoachDose.com. If you want to contact me there, hit the contact button, which is right there. It comes right to my email, or you can hit me at the college, robert.dosermedios@canes.edu. You can sign up for my newsletter here as well. If you're first time on the site, if you're a member, obviously, you could join there for $1 for the first month, and then it's $9.99 after that. Doing workouts of the week. I do a video blog. I do breakdown videos, occasional interviews with people. And then don't forget my performance podcast, which is sponsored by the NSPA, that I do with Will Fleming. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope you got something out of this and you're able to go back and forth and maybe go back and review some of the stuff as well. And do work.